Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zadda Jewelers, KFNC, and 97.9 HD2 Mont Bellevue, Houston. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Best Op Cajun Market in Katy.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham. It is B-Rod behind the glass at Gow. And there's food involved, so Brian is here, on-site engineering. Have already had a lot of boudin, some crackling. This is my kind of party. This is what I'm all about. We're at the Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy. Get on out here. You don't even want to see us. You just want to enjoy the delicious food, and we don't blame you. But get out here to the Best Stop Cajun Market, Katy. Enjoy some delicious food, some of the boudin, some of the crackling. They have some of the Cajun egg rolls. You can get some gumbo. I mean, they have a full menu, too. So even in addition to the delicious food that I partake in, it is all very, very good here at the Best Stop. The Best Stop Cajun Market. Astros played a baseball game yesterday. They're going to play a baseball game today in a couple of minutes, starting at 6:05, of course. Thoughts from yesterday? The Astros dropping back-to-back games, trying to avoid a sweep today.
Yeah, I think quite simply they got out-pitched, they got out-hit, and more times than not, when that happens, you're going to lose the ball game. I thought that they went up against a really good pitcher on top of his game. Verlander made some mistakes. Those mistakes ended up being costly. They had a couple of opportunities with runners on. I think it was it the fifth inning where they had two on, nobody out, couldn't do anything there. Seemed to just get a couple of singles here and there. The bats weren't producing like we've seen, and they drop another game in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was sick with all the warning track power. It's like everybody yesterday had warning track power. You had Jake Myers flying out to the track. You had Alex Bregman flying out to the track. You had a bunch of dudes flying out to the track. And it's like, hey, dude, get in the worker, get in the weight room a little bit. Get in the gym. Start lifting some weights. And I'm joking, obviously. But the amount of flyouts to the warning track were incredibly frustrating. Because you're like, oh, Myers got himself one. Oh, Bregman's going the other way to get himself one. Nope. Just warning track power caught at the track.
Yeah, off the bat, they sounded and looked like they were absolute lasers. Even the Dubon shot to center field with two on was just on a line, but hit right at the center fielder. So, yeah, it was unfortunate. They barreled up some baseballs, but they were at guys. They didn't get far enough. I really thought the Bregman ball was out when he hit it, and then Castellano got it on the warning track. So, unfortunate set of circumstances against a good team, but when you face pitching like that, you're in an uphill battle, and JV let that curveball go and got it kind of hung a little bit, and Castellanos was able to hammer it out of the park. That was the difference.
Yeah, we'll get into the more of the Verlander in a little while. Can Dubon wear a pitch? Like, you're not that good of a hitter. You rarely get on base. I'm getting tired of watching Dubon offensively, and what he'll do is he'll hit a home run to walk off a team, or he'll get a big hit every now and then, and it'll buy him another week. Like, home run buys him a week of unproductivity offensively. Gets a big base hit, unproductive offensively for a period of time. If you're a guy that has a sub-300 on-base percentage, you can't be jumping out of the way of breaking balls that are going to hit you, especially if you're batting ninth and you have Altuve hitting behind you. If you're going to be in that spot and you're going to have a breaking ball thrown softly at your body, you need to stay in the way of it. It's soft. I can't stand seeing it, Dubon. You're not a good – if it's Jordan, okay, get out of the way because he's going to hit a home run. He's a great offensive player. But you're not that.
No.
You're not that, Mauricio. Wear curveballs that are going to hit you.
I know exactly the at-bat you're
there
talking about, too. Yeah, and it's like, and there was two pitches where I was just like, come on, man. I mean, you're jumping 3 feet backwards and getting out of the way. That one's not going to be – that might not even leave a mark when it hits you, and it could put your team in a really good position. Unfortunate because, like you said, he just hasn't been producing consistently. He's one of the guys that have made it so important that you've got a guy like Gamble who continues to contribute, that you're going out and getting a guy like Jason Hayward because you need another guy that's capable of contributing. And that's where some of the woes lie. When you see the bottom half of that lineup, and even today when you see the bottom half of that lineup, you kind of shake your head and go, it's amazing they've done what they've done to be where they are based on the – just who's batting in the lineup that you face from 7-8-9.
Yeah, it's a problem. Dubon's in the lineup again today in left field. They refuse to use Shea Whitcomb out there, which I wish that they would. And like, oh, he's not good enough to – go find out. They're making some excuses for Dubon in the Twitch. King of Twitch, that was harsh on Dubon. No, he's not a good hitter. Get on base, dude. Someone else, oh, Virginia, Dubon's entire body still bruised from the wall. I don't care. Roger Dorn, man. What did Roger Dorn do? Whenever they needed a base runner, Roger Dorn, who's the most selfish player in Major League, what did he do? What did Roger Dorn do? If Roger Dorn can do it, Mauricio Dubon can do it.
Wasn't TK and Blummer even saying, ooh, that's the side that he got hit on?
Yeah.
When he spun out? It was like, okay, yeah, but that's not a fastball coming up a 90-95-plus at your rib cage. That's a spinner that you could easily knock off your elbow or your middle of your back of your shoulder, your tricep, and go, yep, that's good. I'm walking to first base.
Yeah, soft is what it is. Yes, he's still bruised and achy. I don't care. Get on base. This is a pennant race. You have 30-something games left to play. The Mariners could have pulled it to 2.5 yesterday because you lost. Where one, Mauricio Dubon. So the warning track power, Dubon, that annoyed me. I guess if you're looking for a silver lining, well, I guess there's two. One, Jose Siri helped you out.
Yeah, he did. He sure did.
Jose Siri helped you out late at night.
Yep.
When it looked the Rays, I thought, were trying to give away that game, too. Did you see how the Mariners scored their run?
I did not.
Two outs. Victor Robles is stealing third. No chance to get him. The catcher throws it into left field. Mariners up 1-0. I was like, that's how they're going to win this game, is you have an idiot catcher when he should have eaten it, throwing it into left field. But Jose Siri bailed you out. Mariners lost. Yeah.
That was hit well, and he let everybody once again know about it, but he did you a solid last night. That was great to find out that, you know, at least you didn't lose any ground with now, 30 games left to play in the season. I mean, the more you can at least get pushes on nights when you lose, the better off you're going to be.
I wish my wife looked at me like Jose Siri looks at his home run balls.
he
there is love and lust in his eye when he sees his home run dongs flying through the air wherever he's at. I wish my wife would look at me with that kind of admiration.
I mean, the way it's like he's almost got a different routine for every base he touches all the way around. He's just pimping them out. But it's amazing. I mean, he's hitting, what, about two bills?
Yeah.
But he's got a lot of bombs.
Yeah, he's such a weird player. Like, he has incredible power, incredible speed, incredible defense, and he can't hit a lick. he'll run into a few home runs every now and then, but can't hit a lick. And then the other silver lining, if you're going to lose a baseball game without using your leverage guys. Astros didn't have to use their leverage guys, so hopefully they're available today. Hopefully they're needed today. Hopefully they're needed today in a victory for the Astros. But if you're going to lose a baseball game over 162, lose the game without using your leverage guys. That helps you the next day. So that was a little silver lining that I had too.
Yeah, look, I mean, the guys after Verlander did their job, which was fantastic, to just make sure you suck it up. You know, do what you got to do to get to the end of the line, and then turn the page. And hopefully today, you know, you turn the page, you get a pitching matchup that hopefully is a little bit more weighted in your favor. Arrigetti, you need to see an Arrigetti like he was last game. And then go from there, try to salvage one in the series, try to end up 500 on the road trip. Not what the last road trip was, but good enough to come home and say at least we got a split.
Dre says, I hate the way that Dubon flails that back foot when he swings and misses. I agree, man. It's a hard at bat to watch because he has very little power. Yes, he has good bat-to-ball skills. Yes, he's good at touching the baseball, but he's got no power and he never walks. And it's like, man, with your contact and, like, you have above-average speed, mix in a walk, mix in a hit-by-pitch. You'd be such a better offensive player if you would get on base a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, he really did barrel the baseball to center field on the one at bat, but, you know, you never had any chance that it was going out of the ballpark. But Dre's right. I mean, every time I watch him, the fact that he's dancing in the box and he's almost constantly on his front foot, that's a reason why you're not going to have a whole hell of a lot of power when swinging at a baseball, no matter how fast it's pitched at you.
Yeah. Poncho's calling me no empathy bone, no empathy Branham. I like to win. I like to win. I don't care about hurt feelings, and I don't care about hurt bodies. Go win a baseball game. That's all I care about. 713-780-ESPN. Yeah, it is painful watching him bat. 60-30, I love Whitcomb's swing. Dude has pop, and his discipline is pretty good. Can't tell me he's not better than Dubon being in the line. I think that Whitcomb's a better offensive player. The dilemma here is I think that the Astros are reluctant, and maybe reluctant is too soft of a word. Maybe they refuse to use Whitcomb in left field because they don't think he can play out in left field. Because, yes, I would rather have Whitcomb in the lineup than Dubon, too.
I would, too. Offensively alone, I don't think you're going to lose that much defensively simply because of the fact that where they've really been lacking and when they go on, you know, these little mini losing streaks, it's primarily because of the offense. The pitching has been steady, and you need the best bats in the lineup. We talked about that earlier when they were scuffling a little bit in terms of getting the best offensive lineup every single night. I think he gives you solid at-bats. I think that he's a guy that you need to find a way to find a spot in the lineup for because of the fact that he can give you quality at-bats when a lot of guys right now aren't, and we know Chaz isn't, we know Dubon isn't, we know Jake's been scuffling. So, you know, there's plenty of opportunities where you need to be in your best offensive lineup should be a priority for Espada.
Yeah, and if, I mean, Jordan's going to DH a lot of time. Like, you, because of where you're at offensively, it's super risky to play Jordan in left field with 30-something games left. Because if Jordan, even if it's not serious, if Jordan rolls his ankle or Jordan just, like, you know, not even, like, severely pull his hammy, but just, like, it cramps up, okay, well, he's not in the lineup for 5 days, and that's five of the 30 games you have left whenever you have a team right, you know, right on your heels. So, like, I don't think that they're going to use Jordan in left field much the rest of the way.
No, but there's, you know, to your point, there's no time to let up because you are in such a dogfight with the M's. And you think about it, I saw Todd the Show was tweeting, Yiner needs to sit multiple days off to get ready for the stretch run. This is the stretch run. These last 30 games, because it's such a close race, you can't afford to, like, give guys multiple days off. Yiner's not in the lineup today, okay. But the fact is, with as bad as the bottom of the order is, you've got to make sure these guys are in the lineup down the stretch because every game and every at-bat matters for a team that's been hurting offensively.
Yeah, I was okay with Yiner getting the day off. You know, catchers, if you give him a day off today, are you going to unlock him for the rest of the way? I'm okay with the day off for Yiner. 3881, were y'all praising Dubon last year? Not like all this stuff just started. No, I've always made fun of Dubon's free swinging nature and lack of power. I've always thought he was a bit overrated offensively. Now, there is a place for him on the team. Like, he should be your super utility guy. If you're going to start him a good amount, like, those starts should be against lefties because he hits lefties way better than righties. I like his value on the team. I don't think he should be playing every day. And I think he is limited offensively, which is clear.
And we were, I mean, I was honest even last year, too, in the fact that there were tons of at-bats where it was almost the norm that he was going to get down in the count, 0-2, 1-2, but then find a way to kind of fight back into the count where, again, his swing will change and where he is in the box changes from the two-strike approach to when he's starting off an at-bat. But he was able to get results last year. He's not getting results this year.
No, he's not. I mean, even last year he didn't hit for much power.
Right.
0979, Jason Hayward taking one of those spots. Clap emoji, clap emoji, clap emoji. I am excited about Jason Hayward because I actually think he helps this team. I don't think he's a good offensive player anymore, but I do think he's an upgrade to what the Astros currently have. I think it'll be Chaz McCormick that they send down. Which is another positive. Go work on the swing. See if you can figure it out. So I'm more intrigued about how they deploy him and how they use him. Like, you have two lefties, Gamble. Now you're going to have Hayward. Whenever you have a righty pitching, are they both going to be in the lineup? Will one be in the lineup? Are they pinch hitters off the bench? Are they defensive guys that enter late in the game? I'm very intrigued to see how Joe Espada is going to deploy both lefties.
I think it's a reflection on both sides. It's a reflection of the fact that the Astros, that desperate times call for desperate measures. And from the flip side of it, offensively, you know, you just have been getting absolutely nothing to where even a Jason Hayward offensively is better than what you have. And we saw a little bit of Gamble has an arm last night, as well as the fact that Jason Hayward has an arm. So defensively, you have better arms. And you have a chance to have guys that might be able to contribute more offensively than the guys you've been putting in the lineup. Gamble's been pretty solid since he's become an Astro. So if Hayward could do those kind of things, it's as crazy as it sounds, it's an upgrade over what you've been putting out there.
Yeah, I kind of want to see him use both. Like, you have a righty who's really bad against right-handed hitters. Okay, we'll play them both in the corners if Jordan's going to be your DH.
I expect it. I totally expect it. I would put Hayward in right and Gamble in left every time there's a lefty on the mound. I mean, a righty on the mound.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll take your thoughts on the Game 2 loss yesterday. Astros got shut out. I found it funny, the Astros admin, they posted the Astros Twitter lineup yesterday. Crickets, crickets, nothing, crickets, nothing, more nothing, crickets, final score. They had nothing between the lineup tweet and the final score tweet. It was one. It was that type of game.
It really was.
That's how bad of a game. There were zero highlights from the Astros yesterday. That admin just, you know, basically showed up to work and didn't do anything. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from the Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy, where they have the best Cajun food you could ever want. Get out here, enjoy that. Say hello to us if you choose. Yell at us if you choose. Just ignore us if you choose. That's okay, too. Busy show. It is a Wednesday, so we got plenty to talk about. Texans making the moves down to the 53 yesterday. We'll get the aftershocks of that. CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jones, is there still drama there? Dana Brown's moving goalpost. We got to talk about Verlander. Verlander yesterday, what did you see from the old man? And are we heading towards a world where Justin Verlander is not one of your playoff starters? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line, Twitch. You can find us there, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Be careful if you go there, though. You might lose your home. YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitter at ESPN975. Blank Man's at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by B-Mac. B-Rod, he doesn't work enough for us to say his Twitter handle. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word for the good people at MyBookie. MyBookie.ag is the place you ought to be if you want to bet on sports, because they have all the sports, all the games, all the live action, all the time. And even when there's not games going on, you can have live casino games going on because live dealers are waiting for you to play poker and blackjack and so much more. They're fantastic because they are definitely always focused and concentrated on taking care of the customer. They're doing it again as we get into football season. We know college football season is here, and we are ready for it. NFL right around the corner. And we know that that's the best time to get signed up at mybookie.ag. When you do, if you use our promo code BET975, you can cash in with extra cash. That means that when you put money in and you put money into your account, you can get extra money added from MyBookie up to $1,000, depending on what your deposit is. It's absolutely fantastic. More money in your account, more games you can bet on, and, of course, more chances that you can actually win. Phenomenal. And also, you don't have to drive to Louisiana. You don't have to fly to Las Vegas. If you want casino games, live dealers are standing by. If you want to do some of that, too, they are waiting for you. Check them out today. Go to MyBookie.ag and use our promo code BET975. It's like I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere. But the only place I tell you to do it, mybookie.ag, promo code BET975.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy.
Need to tell Boston to add some time during the breaks. That way we can enjoy all the food they just gave us. The Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy, right off of I-10, just before you get to 99 if you're coming from Houston. I say this all the time. If I'm going I-10 East, if I'm going I-10 West, I always stop at the Best Stop. And so happy they have one now here in the greater Houston area. They just brought out some fresh boudin, smoked boudin. They're crackling, their pork rinds, a boudin ball, their Cajun egg roll. So Ooh, good.
That egg
so
roll good. Is fantastic.
I could very easily sit here for the next few hours and do nothing and eat and enjoy myself. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, Justin Verlander yesterday. What did you see from Verlander? And are we entering a world where Justin Verlander might not be a playoff starter for Astros?
Jeremy, you and I have gone back and forth and talked about this and where he is at this point in his career. And as much as I kind of wanted to fight it and say, you know what, as a pitcher that's been there, done that, and been so dominant, I was hopeful that there was a chance that with all this time off that he could come back and that he could be obviously not what he's been in the past, but be somewhat effective and dominant enough to where you think this is a guy that still could be somewhere in the top of the rotation. And last night, I know we still have time before the playoffs. I know that he's still kind of bouncing back. But Justin Verlander is not yet a shell of himself, but he's not what he used to be. And when you get the production you've been getting out of the other five starters that are in your rotation, there's an easy discussion to have about the fact that Justin Verlander, as much as mentally he believes that he should be a starter on a playoff team, and he believes he should be a starter on this playoff team. When you start looking at the other guys in this rotation, now that Arrigetti is really pitching well, the fact that Blanco has pitched well all year and really has shown signs of getting back to that in his last start, and then the top of the rotation guys, when you look at Fromber, when you look at what Hunter Brown has been able to do, and then the resurgence of Kikuchi ever since he's been an Astro – you can look at it and realistically say, where does Justin Verlander fit, and is he better than any one of those five guys, especially the four guys that have really kind of become your horses?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to go with this. First thing is like, okay, there's 30 games left, six-man rotation. They have five turns to the rotation left. Let's see where we're at, five times through the rotation. I don't think Verlander was as bad yesterday as everybody's making it seem. Like, seven hits, five innings ain't great. But you get a call on Trey Turner, I think the outing yesterday is much different. You get a very easily gotten out of that four-run third inning with just the one run if he gets the call. I'm not going to criticize the umpires. Like, 50-50 call. Was it a strike if you had the robo zone? Yes, it was a strike. But you see those calls go against you. You see those calls go for you. Mm-hmm. 50-50, whatever, 50% of the time. So I thought Verlander was a little bit better than his line score. This is a good offense. He made a bad pitch to Castellanos. He had a breaking ball that caught way too much of the plate. Castellanos dropped the hammer on it, and see you later. So I don't think Verlander's start was as bad yesterday as it looked. I want to see where we're at in five turns of the rotation, but I'll do what I do to you all the time. Well, if the season ended now, what are you doing with the playoff rotation?
Yeah,
and I think it goes two ways. I think, one, it's what are they going to do, and then, two, what would you do? I don't see a scenario where they don't give Justin Verlander a playoff start just because he is Justin Verlander, because of the clout, because of the cachet. I think they'll give JV a start. Now, what would I do? What gives you the best chance to win? Well, if the season ended right now, you're in a three-game series. You're in a wild card series. You're playing a three-game series. So it's not even a four-man playoff rotation. It's a three-man playoff rotation. And Framber Valdez is a no-doubter. Hunter Brown's a no-doubter. Mm-hmm. After that's where the conversation starts. Who would be your number three after Framber, after Hunter? Justin Verlander, Yusei Kikuchi. If you want to throw Aaron Geddy into the mix, if you want to throw Ronel Blanco in the mix, you could go in any of those different ways. So if you had to pick one to be your Game 3 starter, now you're talking about Game 3, you're looking at an elimination game, who would it be?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it comes down to the fact that if you get the Aaron Geddy that you've gotten, you got the last start when he's really on his A game, then that's a guy that I think is firmly in the discussion. To me, it's Kikuchi in the mix because of the fact that he's been so effective since he's been an Astro, and he has a lot of good pitches in his arsenal versus to me, Ronel Blanco. And the fact that between Kikuchi and Blanco, you're looking – is it the experience of Kikuchi? Is it the effectiveness that Blanco has shown you all year long? I just personally have not. I need to see a lot more of Justin Verlander before I believe that you're right. The name recognition is going to matter. I think that that's what's going to project him into being one of those starters, regardless of what we think. But for me personally, I'm not putting Justin Verlander in that top three right now. I'm not. I think it comes down to Kikuchi and Blanco to me, and Kikuchi is a more veteran pitcher with a little bit more experience. I think I would lean that way. Blanco has pitched out of the bullpen before. He could be a good bullpen arm for you. And then Verlander the same based on, you know, where he's at, how he's feeling, and how you want to, you know, use him if you want to do, you know, picking up the backside for multiple innings of a start. However you want to do it. I think Kikuchi right now, the way he's pitched, I would put him there in the three spot.
Because you're getting nothing out of your corner outfield, Yordan's going to be my DH. I'm going to start Yusei Kikuchi in left field. I'm going to start Verlander in right. When there's a right-handed hitter up, it's going to be Verlander. When there's a left-handed hitter up, I'm going to put Kikuchi on the mound and play Verlander in left.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
No, it's a very little league.
I think Tampa did that for a while. Not for a while. I think they did it like once or twice. I don't know where I go. I think of those four guys, I think Aaron Geddy's been the one pitching the best. Like, outside of one start, I think Aaron Geddy's been the one that's pitching the best. So if I have the problem is you have a rookie in an elimination game now because it's game three. So it's challenging. I think that all hands are on deck in that sort of game. I think you probably start Verlander. I think the Astros would start Verlander. I'm not sure I would probably start Verlander. And then it's like, okay, left-handed pocket in the third inning, Yusei Kikuchi, come give me two innings. Okay, now back to the righties, Ronel Blanco, give me two innings. So if you're in a wild card series, I think that game three is all of those guys are throwing, and they probably start Verlander because he's Justin Verlander.
And you just have everybody empty the tank. Instead of just stretching it out and trying to, you know, get extended innings, just go out there, empty the tank, like you said, for two innings. Give me everything you got, and we'll piece it together to get to the next round and then worry about how we're going to set up the rotation. You're not wrong with Eric Geddy, but I'm just very leery of putting a guy that doesn't have any playoff experience as a rookie pitcher in an elimination game. Because it's one thing to say, hey, this is your first playoff start. It's another thing to say, if we lose, we go home, and we're putting the ball in your hands. That concerns me.
Well, three of those guys would be making their first playoff start.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Verlander's the only one of those three guys that has started a playoff game. Rodel Blanco has not started a playoff game. Spencer Arrighetti is a rookie. And I think Yusei Kikuchi has appeared in
one playoff game,
but it was out of the bullpen.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't even I'm not even sure he appeared in the game. I know he was on a team that made the playoffs. He might have been left off of the playoff roster. I don't know. He appeared in the AL wildcard game two. He appeared in the fourth and the fifth inning and went an inning and two-thirds. So it'd be his first playoff start, only his second appearance. So outside of Verlander, you have zero starts in the postseason.
Yeah.
From those the candidates. Obviously, Fromber has playoff starts.
Yeah, no, that's an issue no matter how you look at it and where who you play and what the series is going to be. If you can somehow avoid and get the bye, you're still dealing with guys with little experience to no experience coming through at big times for you. But that's kind of what you've signed up for with the amount of injuries you've had to endure. The good news is you've got the two horses at the front of your rotation that if they keep pitching the way they've been pitching, should kind of set the tone for you and put you in a good spot as you get deeper into a series.
Game three, got to go with Verlander on a short leash, says 0979. Let's assume that the Astros are in a division series and you go four-man rotation. You went with Kikuchi as your three?
Correct.
Who would be your four now?
I really like Arrighetti. I just like the way his stuff plays. I like the fact that he's got the best stuff. Again, because of the way the Astros, we know the Astros think, there's no doubt in my mind whether it's three or four, Verlander's getting a start. With a four-man rotation. Verlander is one of the guys, and I don't think it's questioned, no matter how he's pitching. He'd have to really, really, really fall apart down the stretch. So I think it becomes then between Kikuchi and Arrighetti. I would probably lean Kikuchi again, but Arrighetti, I just don't know if he can, you know, I don't know if he's ever thrown out of the bullpen. I would assume not. But I would go Kikuchi and Verlander to follow up after Brown and Valdez.
Yeah, it also depends to me on who you're facing. Like, if you're facing a heavy left-handed hitting lineup or the best hitters are lefties, okay, more you say Kikuchi. Mm-hmm. If you're facing a team that's nothing but righties, then you're probably looking to go Spencer Arrighetti. I like the idea of moving Blanco to the pen, make him your long guy. Now, I mean, getting there, obviously, is something that it's important. But, yes, I think that the possibility of Justin Verlander not being one of the playoff starters exists. It probably exists more if we're making the decisions than the Astros making the
Correct.
Decisions. I just it's going to be super hard to be like, hey, Verlander, you're not in our playoff rotation. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. The guy that would potentially be delivering that message would be Danner Brown. And we're learning more and more how big of a goalpost mover Dana Brown is. We'll explain. It's the Bees broadcasting live for the Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I'm pumped up. I'm wearing my colors today. It is football season. Football season is finally here. Week one in college football. Obviously, they had games last week, but those weren't real games. It's week one. Game week is here for all of us. And it's your first chance to see the Willie Fritz Houston Cougars this Saturday, 6 p.m., August 31st at TDECU Stadium. Head to uhcougars.com/tickets right now or call 713-GO-COUGS. Lock in your ticket starting as low as $15. You've been waiting for this all summer. Let's be honest. You've been waiting for this since the last football game of the year ended. Well, it's back. Come out and enjoy the excitement, the pageantry, the roar of the crowd this Saturday at TDECU Stadium. The Houston Cougar football team taking on UNLV in the start of a thrilling new era. The Willie Fritz era. Donovan Smith, of course, leading the charge on the offensive side as the Cougs take on the Rebs from UNLV. From the marching band to the tailgates and every heart-pounding play, this is college football at its finest. Get out to TDECU Stadium on Saturday. uhcougars.com/tickets. 713-GO-COUGS. Lock in those tickets now. Come early, be loud, and wear red.
ESPN 97.5. The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Welcome back. Broadcasting live from the Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy, where they have the best food, boudin here, boudin balls, some cracklin', some pork rinds. Richard, our friend, eating some of the chicken sausage gumbo. He said he thinks the Astros are going to fall apart, Blinkers. Richard did.
Oh, my.
Do you think Richard's right? Are the Astros going to fall apart?
Glass half empty over there, Richard?
I think it's the gumbo. It's the gumbo that's half empty.
All right, half empty, yes.
Yeah, I mean, they're clinging. They're clinging. They're hanging on by a thread, and hopefully they get Kyle Tucker back soon, and it changes some things around. 1140 says Fromber, Brown, Kikuchi, JV, Blanco in Game 5, so going a five-man rotation in the playoffs.
No way.
That's a bold strategy, Cotton. 5315, how about Altuve stealing home? I don't know how he would have done that with the game starting at 6:05. I don't know how he would have done that.
Yeah.
Dana Brown was on with the QB1 over at the I mean, he was never a QB1 in his life, but QB1 over at the cardiac arrest earlier today. And he said now he expects to get Kyle Tucker back in the first 10 days of September. Remember, this was the first week of September. And before that, it was late August. And before that, it was, I don't know if he needs a trip to the 10-day injured list. Dana Brown, I've learned, we know that loose lips sink ships, and he has loose lips. I like his eyes. I do like Dana Brown's eyes. The lips, not so much. He's a goalpost mover, Blankers. He continues to move the goalpost, and, well, it's the training staff telling him. I don't care. He's the head of the snake. He's the guy leading the organization, hopefully. But he is the goalpost mover when it comes to, really, quite frankly, all of the players on the Astros that get injured.
Yeah, you know, the more you hear from him, the more you think that he should just take a page out of Thumper's book from Bambi, and if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all, because it's a really bad look to keep changing it every single time anybody asks about an update of Kyle Tucker. And I understand that you don't know what you don't know, and whatever your medical staff is telling you, it's a very strange injury, and the fact that, you know, it's kind of rare that he got hit in the same spot twice, and we can't figure out if it's why it's taking longer than if it had been broken. But it is what it is, and all it does is just stir up the emotions of Astros fans every time it comes up and he does this, because now doomsday. I mean, even with the Hayward signing, most people were out there going, and you saw the kind of closet general managers on Twitter saying, well, this must mean that Tucker's done for the year. And I saw multiple tweets on that. It's like, you don't know, but Dana doesn't help you to know because of the things he's saying, because he keeps pushing that finish line down the road to where you have more you know, chance to worry. I've dealt with Daryl Morey before. Daryl Morey is very similar. They've never found a microphone that they don't like. And when they like it, you can still talk, but he just constantly tries to give you something, and in the process, he frustrates a lot of people that follow this team.
See, I don't get the sense that Dana Brown loves the microphone, though. Like,
no.
I don't know. I don't think he seeks out the microphone. I think that he's trying to be transparent because he knows the reputation of this organization. I don't think it comes from a bad place, and I like Dana Brown. I want to be very clear because it sounds like I'm being critical of the guy. I like Dana Brown. I think he has an eye for talent. Some of the trades, let's see where they are in 6 years. But I like Dana Brown as a general manager. I think there are times whenever he should be biting his tongue, whenever he's not. But I don't think he seeks the microphone. I don't think he likes the sound of his own voice like a Daryl Morey does. I don't think that that's the problem at all. I think that the issue is here is he's trying to be transparent from an organization that has not been transparent in the past, when, quite frankly, he should be transparent. Like, you're setting these expectations, whether it's from the fan base, but it also, I bet you the players don't like this. Like, if Kyle Tucker's hearing, well, they're going to expect him back in, you know, late August, and then he doesn't make that, the fans are starting to turn again. Not all of them, but you start to see a small amount of people, hey, you know, Kyle Tucker, he's milking it. Like, how often do we see that now? We would never see that about Kyle Tucker. You know, if you gave him a, you know, we hope to get him back before the playoffs, or just don't put a deadline at all, I don't think you would see the turning on Kyle Tucker. And again, it's not a majority, but there is some people always milking it. His agent's telling him this. He's looking for the bag, so he doesn't want to risk injury, all of that. So whenever you put these hopeful expectations out there from Dana Brown, I don't see the reward for doing that.
He doesn't have to do all the media hits. He doesn't have to do. Now, some of them are required, like with the flagship. But he doesn't have to join the TV. He doesn't have to do some of the things. And when he does do media sessions, he doesn't have to tell you. And you're right. He should leave it open-ended on the backside. If you don't know and you're hoping, or, you know, he has to continue to progress, just say, hey, you know what? We're monitoring his progress. He's making progress. We just can't pinpoint it just yet. People would rather have that than have the false expectation of a deadline passed and then another deadline set and then another expectation that isn't met. Those are problems that frustrate a lot of people. So from that standpoint, I think that, and again, it's a learning process because I like Dana Brown too. I wish they would, you know, all season long, and we don't know what we don't know. I just wish everybody would let him do his job. But I think one of the things when doing his job, he'll learn as he goes is the less you can say less is more in a lot of ways because it's not going to create a lot of the sideshow if you just say you don't know, but he's progressing.
Yeah, see, I had a lot of people arguing me about this today, and they're like, well, you know, he's just relaying the message that his training staff is giving him. Why?
Right.
Or they're saying, you know, darned if you do, darned if you don't. If he didn't say a specific timeline, then people would be criticizing him for saying nothing. You're right. They would be. He is in a darned if you do, darned if you don't situation. But which of the two is better? Which of the two of the two evils is better? I think it's the less information. And if you look at the history of sports and people in power, general managers, head coaches, managers, I mean, how often would Dusty Baker give you a date? Dusty Baker didn't give you a date.
Uh-uh.
How often would Bill Belichick give you a date?
Never.
Belichick wouldn't give you a date. Nick Caserio, D'Amico, go through the list of coaches in any sport, general managers in any sport, and there are very, very few that are like, okay, here's the timeline. Okay, here's the timeline. Here's the timeline. And I don't think that Dana Brown's a liar. I think that Dana Brown, deep down when he said it, thought he'd be back by the end of August. I think whenever he said the first week of September, he thought that. I think he still thinks the first 10 days of September. I don't think that he's lying. I just think that the better practice is to say nothing. Don't give the information. How is Kyle Tucker's progression? Well, it's progressing, getting a little bit better each and every day. We hope to get him back.
Yeah,
That's it.
Look, I think you're right from the player perspective, too. It would get increasingly frustrating as a player if you and your agent aren't the ones speaking about when your return date might be. And then your general manager is, and then you're not living up to those expectations. I think that as a player, you would be very frustrated by that.
Sure.
And you can oblige the media, but you don't have to be as specific as he has been in this situation. And just, you know, you can speak to the media. You can say, hey, look, he's busting his tail. He's doing everything that the training staff is asking him every single day, working as hard as he can. But right now, because of the uniqueness of the injury that he sustained, we don't want to push him back too quick, and we can't pinpoint when he's going to be back. Then no feelings are hurt and everybody is kind of under the same assumption. He's supposed to be back. We expect him back at some point. We just don't know when.
Don't have loose lips. They sink ships. Mm-hmm. 8089, with this type of injury, his return is fluid. We agree with that. There is no arguing that. I understand it's a very difficult injury. I understand it's very difficult for Dana. I don't think it's difficult for Dana Brown to answer the question. But we understand that, like, we have no idea when Kyle Tucker's going to return, which is why you don't put dates on those things. Like, if you don't have a concrete date or you know the injury's a fluid situation, don't put a date on it. GMs, head coaches, managers do not do that. Why are you doing it? And, look, it went from we don't know if we need to place him on the 10-day IL to late August to first week of September to today now. First 10 days of September. And look, that's only an extra 3 days, but it's goalpost moving. It has went further back, further back, further back. And Kyle Tucker's not the unique case in this either. There's been other players that have also had the same treatment, different injuries, but same treatment. What did he say about Lance McCullers? Well, you know, we think we can get him back by the summer. Well, we think we can get him back by, you know, early July. Well, we think he'd be a great trade, you know, a trade piece at the deadline. We're treating him as such. Oh, well, now it's going to be, you know, mid-August.
Yep.
Oh, now his season is over. Same thing with, and I know that these injuries are tricky, which is why you don't put deadlines on them, even if they're hopeful timelines. Same thing with Luis Garcia. Luis Garcia, well, you know, we like where he's at. We're thinking early, you know, June, mid-June. Okay, well, now we're looking at, well, we think he could be a piece that's going to be like a trade. And if you're adding that piece to the rotation, what a wonderful thing that is. Oh, now his season is done. Just don't put dates on them. There's, like, setbacks happen. Stop putting dates on things.
Well, and the other thing, too, Jeremy, is the fact that in the NBA it's become a requirement now because every public relations department is different and communication staff is different, that it's required that you bring in an outside media trainer to work with your general manager, your coaches, and your players to kind of walk them through these kind of things because this isn't their forte. Their forte is actually doing what they do, whether it be playing or coaching or you know, handling the front office of a professional sports team. When you are, there's ways to be able to do exactly what we're speaking of and be comfortable doing it because some people feel like they owe, you know, the honesty gene. They owe everybody to be as honest they can be. Whereas if you get the proper training, you can answer a question. You can give, it can suffice for whoever's trying to get the question answered for a story or whatever it is. But you don't set yourself up to be the guy that's going to take all the bullets if you give them a hard deadline and things don't happen.
And I legitimately and sincerely think that Dana Brown's doing it from a good place.
I think so, too.
I think he knows the reputation of the Astros for being kind of shady with injuries, and I think that he's trying to be transparent and upfront to try to alleviate and maybe repair that, you know, loss of trust between organization and fan. I legitimately think that. But I don't think it's the best practice for the players that are getting hurt. It turns some of the fans against the players. Players don't appreciate that. It sets these lofty expectations that you're not meeting. Just err on the side of caution. And will people be mad at you that you're not being transparent? Yes, but that's the lesser of two evils.
And you can deal with that a lot easier than when these deadlines miss, and now you're going to catch some of the, not just the strays, you're going to catch some of the bullets where people are saying, hey, forget where if the player made the deadline or not. You're the guy that told us that he was supposed to already be back or be back on this date. And when he's not, then they're going to come headhunting for him. They're going to be looking for him. They're going to be pointing a finger at him. And you can avoid all that. It's just as simple as being, you can be vague, you can still be honest, and you can avoid a lot of the side shots that he's setting himself up for.
713-780-ESPN, HR&P listener line, broadcasting live from the Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy. Finest Boudin, finest Cracklin, finest Cajun egg rolls you will find in the city of Houston. Quite frankly, the state of Texas. All right. C.J. Stroud, you're never going to believe who C.J. Stroud has pulled motivation from. I'll just tell you now. I think it'll be a better tease. He has pulled motivation from James Harden. C.J. Stroud pulling motivation from James Harden. What everybody wanted to hear, right? We'll tell you what it was next. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville is the best in the business at so many things. He does Botox. He does spa treatments. He can help you and your significant other in so many ways. But the big thing where he has helped me is the PRP treatments and the NeoGraft procedure. They are game changers. Multiple people at the station have gone through the process. They've done the PRP. They've gotten the NeoGraft. And everybody raves about the results. The fact is, it's your own hair, and you get it back, and it stays with you for the rest of your life. It's fantastic. As a listener to us, if you are interested in information on how he might be able to help you, all you got to do is go to 975hair.com, and you can sign up for a free consultation. The consultation normally costs $150 for people off the street. You listen to us, you go to him, you get it for free, and you just sit down and have them explain to you the PRP. Have them explain to you the NeoGraft. And there's no signing on the dotted line, no commitments to make, no money out of pocket, just a Q&A session where you can ask all the questions to your heart's content and then find out if it's something you might consider. I did it. I couldn't be happier with it. And I'm telling you that all the results and everything that they put in front of me tell me that I am going to have this hair for the rest of my life. It's my hair put in a different spot. Essentially, it's like fertilizing your lawn with the PRP treatments and then resodding your lawn when you get into taking hair from places where it's never going to go away and putting it where you need it most. Absolutely fantastic, and all because of Doc Linville. Check him out today and tell him I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Best Stop Cajun Market in Katy.
That's right. That's where we are. It's that time of year again where we want to thank our loyal listeners at our 2024 Listener Appreciation Party. Join the broadcast, editorial, and management team of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 for an evening of food, drinks, and fun at the home of Gal Media. And while you're here, Blankers is going to give you a tour of the production side of the building from a behind-the-scenes look at where and how your favorite shows and videos are made. A limited amount of guaranteed admission tickets are available for purchase, includes food and drink. Must be 21 or older to attend. Head to ESPN975.com under the promotions tab to secure your tickets now. C.J. Stroud. He looks for motivation anywhere and everywhere. You know, good, sharp mind, young player, has big aspirations for what he wants to do as an athlete. And the latest motivation from C.J. Stroud that we have learned about, C.J. Stroud was on the Boardroom podcast, Boardroom cover story, talking to them. And this is where C.J. Stroud pulled the motivation from James Harden.
But I knew I was always talented at sports, and I remember I seen James Harden's contract, and they broke it down by the year, the month, the day, and the second. And I was like, man, they paying this dude all this money to play a sport we grew up loving. From that moment on, my life changed. And I stopped going to lunch. I stopped hanging out. I stopped going to parties. I stopped doing a lot of things. I started just grinding and working because I wanted to change my family dynamic and my last name. I wanted to mean something.
There you go. C.J. Stroud pulling from the motivation of James Harden. I know you're a big Harden guy, Blankers.
Oh, you too.
So how about that? How about Stroud pulling some motivation from James Harden and basically doing the things that James Harden did do?
Let's end it right there, and I can live with it. If it goes any further, not that I ever have to worry about picking up the bad habits of James Harden if I'm C.J. Stroud, then we're just fine. Because if it means that, you know, breaking it down in terms of how much you can make per minute gives him extra motivation to kind of keep even your nose to the grindstone even more, I never have to worry, I don't think, about C.J. Stroud and his work ethic and the things he's doing off the field and making sure that he is staying, you know, clean and right and doing everything to be the best quarterback he can be. With James Harden, it was a nightly experience in terms of both on the court and off the court of just how wayward he could get and what he was going to do, whether you liked it or not. So as long as he stops right there with that quote and what he was basing it off of, that's fine. I would be concerned if he started going any further into the lifestyle of James Harden.
Yeah, I don't think that he is. Like, he flat out said, this is the reason that I don't party, I don't drink. So, I mean, just basically, it's not even really motivation from Harden. It's like, okay, Harden made this amount of money. This is how, you know, how much he was making a month, a week, a day, a second. And I was like, man, I want that kind of money. So it really wasn't even Harden that was the motivation here. It was more the money.
Right.
It was the money that motivated him. So, and we know the story of Stroud, you know, his father in prison. His mother lived in a storage, you know, it wasn't a storage unit. She lived in an area of the storage unit. It was a regular, like, you know, loft type of living situation. She wasn't living in a storage unit, but it was at the place where the storage unit was at. So, you know, he's motivated by that money. Now, do you think that you need that level of commitment to be elite at the quarterback position?
No, I think some people are just gifted enough. Look, Brett Favre is one of those guys where you might not have the best work ethic in the world. You might not have the deep knowledge of the X's and O's. You just might have an absolute cannon and the athletic ability to do things that he was able to do. The story always goes that when Ty Detmer was his backup, they were in the film room with the team several times, and they were talking about a nickelback. And he was like, can you explain to me what the nickel and the dime is? He goes, why do we keep talking about change? And Detmer's like, you're dead serious, aren't you? And he goes, yeah, I don't even know what they're talking about. And he's like, you know when the corner comes in and he replaces a linebacker and we do this and we do that. And he's like, oh, yeah, I just throw it to the open guy. And that's when you knew, like, some guys, they're just so gifted athletically with God-given talent that you don't have to do, and they don't do the kind of things that a lot of the good quarterbacks do. I don't think you have to have it, but I do think it's a bonus when you get a guy that, no matter how much the ability of C.J. Stroud, when we hear constantly about the fact that he knows the playbook inside and out. At Ohio State, the rumors are he didn't really want to have conversations with the OC because he wasn't calling the plays. He didn't have the in-depth knowledge in the plays like Day did. So he had just dealt with Day and his head coach instead of dealing with the OC because that's how dialed into the plays and the playbook he was. It's fantastic when it's like the icing on the cake. You get a guy with all this ability, and he's a footballer, and he just wants to talk ball and study ball and be about ball as much as possible. It makes life easier for everybody. The coaches don't have to worry about him. They know what he's doing and what he wants to be. And it makes everybody around him better, both in the training room and in the film room and on the field. That's just the added bonus of getting a guy like C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, I do think that there is a level of commitment that players have to get the most out of their talent. I think Brett Favre was more talented than Tom Brady, but Brett Favre has one Super Bowl ring, and Brady has
seven
Super Bowl rings for
seven
Brady,
or eight.
Which is more than every NFL organization, which is the craziest, you know, accolade in sports, that a player has more championships than any team in the sport. He was incredibly weird. Like, to get the most out of yourselves, I think you have to be a borderline psycho. And I think Tom Brady is a borderline psycho. You know, doesn't eat carbs, eats avocado ice cream. Like, I think Nick Saban is a borderline psycho. So I think a lot of the greats do have to go to the extremes. Like, what makes a guy great? Going to the extremes to give him the edge over the guys that are either just as talented or more talented.
Yeah, I mean, even from the standpoint of Brady, regardless of his own trainer and then the training system, and like you mentioned, the diet, the fact that they said that every offseason he was reinventing his delivery, his footwork, trying as he got older to make sure his release was quicker, doing those kind of things. And you mentioned it. It's almost like a psychotic behavior. Like, you are so obsessed with staying on top and doing everything to be the best quarterback you can be that it's a never-ending process that you are adapting every single opportunity you can to get better and stay on top.
Yeah, I don't think that it's like a prerequisite. Like, I think you can be really good without this. Now, does it take your game further? I think it does. I think that it does. I think it adds to your talent. I don't think it adds to your talent, but I think it gives you that extra edge on what is already your talent to maybe push you across some players that might be slightly better than you or
you
more
think
talented
it's more
than
prevalent
you.
With a position like quarterback and,
yes,
and football?
Absolutely.
For me, I totally agree. Because you can roll out a basketball, and if you just have unbelievable basketball ability, regardless of whether you know the plays or you know how to, you know, what the defensive switches are and what they're trying to call, you can excel. And you can excel at a very high level.
But even that, have there been players just as talented as Jordan? I think there's no doubt there's been players just as talented. But what gave Jordan the edge over guys who were just as talented or in the same ballpark of his talent? The mental side. Like the extra element that adds to that physical talent.
I just don't know if there's anybody been more talented than him, but I hear what you're saying. I think the other thing that's interesting, too, is like, I'm glad you said the mental side. Because there was early Jordan, who was one of those dialed in, like, you know, completely focused on basketball guys, to the guy where we hear the stories where he could go to the casino the night before and he could do whatever he was going to do, staying up all night. But yet when it came time to play the game, he was just on a level better than everybody else. But that's why I think in football, especially as it relates to the quarterback position, it's so much more important, and I think it can be a bigger factor than it would be, say, in basketball or maybe baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jordan's edge was his competitiveness. Jordan had. Mm-hmm. Brady's edge was that he wanted to be the best ever. And I think Stroud has a little bit of that. I'm not saying Stroud's going to be the best ever. Do not put those words in my mouth. But you heard it in the soundbite. Like, he eliminates all of this stuff because it feels like it takes away from what he could potentially earn as an athlete.
You know, you and I talk about tiers a lot. The three of us talk about, you know, who's on what tiers. It can be the difference between getting to that next tier when you do have a lot of talent. But if you also put in that extra work with your mechanics and or the X's and O's and you dial in even more, that can be the little difference that takes you to that next tier that otherwise where you might never get to.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good way to say it. It might climb you a tier. And if you're the opposite, it might take you
absolutely
might take you out of the league, Kadarius Toney. All right, 103 NFL players voted on a variety of things from NFL quarterbacks, like the most overrated quarterback in the league.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.